Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Broken Tree Ranch in Shingle Springs, California, you are listening to Ghostwriter Paranormal Radio in Studio B, live on blogtalkradio.com. This is John Almada here. I'm back from the Great Southwest Tour and a little bit of a kind of a busted up back here. It was funny. I wore my wallet in my back pocket, and 700 miles in that Mustang, it kind of tweaked my back. So I'm a little worse for the wear there, but I unpacked the car. I did manage to get it unpacked and ran into rainstorms on the way home. And left Flagstaff 6 o'clock in the morning. I woke up and I was out by 6:20, and I was flying that Stang as fast as I could, and I got home in 11.5 hours. So got home about just shy of 7 o'clock last night, and stayed up and had a little something to eat, and then just crashed and got up to a bad back. But if that's all I had to happen, I feel pretty good, because I went into some really, pretty interesting country. You know, I did a lot of hiking in the backwoods, walked all over Prescott, Arizona, and Dominica put me up there, and Dom's here in the chat room. Hi, Dom, and thank you so much. I had a blast there. Karen hooked up with me. She drove out from Phoenix and met up with me. We went to Montezuma's Well. And Montezuma's Castle, not too far from Sedona. Spent a lot of time in Sedona. I also hunted. The first place we hit was the Armagosa Opera House, incredibly haunted place. And I also did spend some time in Las Vegas. Las Vegas has some of the most confused paranormal energy I have ever had the experience to be around. But now tonight, I'm still not sure if Marie will be in tonight along with Larry. They signed on for the show tonight, but I don't see them dialed in. So if they don't make it, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and switch the show over and talk all about the stuff that happened here. And if Karen can dial in, we can talk about maybe some of our experiences there at the Montezuma's Well and things like that. So I'm kind of getting that feeling Marie might have not gotten this scheduled quite off the bat there, but I had it on my calendar, so I hope she did. But she's always good, though. If we don't end up with her tonight, she'll be back for another edition, and she is really a great interview. And Larry it'll be the first time to have Larry on. Too, and Larry is her partner out at paraexplorers.com, and they do a lot of really interesting books together, so they're always good for a great interview. But, it's good to be back. I've been off for a couple of weeks. This whole trip really was the big event paranormally for me, at least for the year. And, hooking up and meeting all of you out there, Dominica took me all around Prescott. We went to Matt's Bar and Saloon, and that was an interesting place. It was very haunted. Even in the daytime, you could feel the energy. There were bloodstains on the floor from a fight, many years ago, where someone was killed in the back. A lot of electromagnetic activity, things like that. Oh, and Dominica says she was sent to Montezuma as well, wants to release spirits. There were a lot there. I think Karen can attest to that, too. I mean, we were both picking up on stuff. There was, oh, and I do see a 623. Yeah, it's just popped in, so I'm not sure who that is. So I'm going to go ahead and take that here in just a sec. But, you know, the Yarmagosa, we have phenomena after phenomena, you know, auditory things going on. I was hearing a woman speak in my room. I was room 11. Bad feelings in the what they call a spook hollow at the far end of the hotel area that's blocked off where people don't normally go in. I actually got so it was such an upsetting experience for me on the first time in. I lasted 5 minutes and I had to get out, and I've never had that happen. It was a very bad place, and I kind of collected my wits about me, and I was with Maury Moots from Las Vegas, and she took me back in, and I immediately picked up there had been a lot of murder and also rapes in this building. And she said, you know, she hadn't told me anything, and she said, "You got it right." And so it was just a really powerful negative energy there. But over in the, if you go over into the opera house, which is separate of that by about 200-300 feet, it's a completely different thing and a very positive energy. And we actually did, Maury and I did some play acting on the stage. Like we were dancing, and I've got video of this that I'm going to be putting up. Yes, you get to see me dance. And it was just amazing because at one point we looked up and we had mist all around us in the stage. And I said, you know, I was looking at Maury like, "Do you see that?" And she's going, "Yeah." And I'm realizing she didn't turn on any fog generators. So we were having, you know, manifestations that hopefully the camera caught. And I was using the full spectrum. It was a great learning experience, you know, there at that place, and just an awesome haunt. You can get a little bit of everything. And as a matter of fact, that's going to be on Ghost Adventures coming up in, what is it? That's going to be in December, the Yarmagosa. So do check that out. But let's go ahead and take the 623 caller. 623, you're on the air.
Hi, John. It's Karen.
Hi, Karen. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm very tired, but good. Glad to see you got home okay.
Yeah, it was a long drive. You know, the worst part of it is when you're driving, just as you get out of Kingman and you drive all the way to, towards, Bakersfield, and, that desert drive all the way is just one long, boring stretch.
It is.
I mean, there's,
it is
oh,
very.
God. It was horrendous, and
been there,
I just,
done that.
Oh yeah, I mean, what's that town? Starts with a B in the middle of nowhere. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's got a big junction there that they make a big deal out of at McDonald's, and they've got. I'm trying to think of the name, and I'm still pretty tired. I'm trying to think of the name of it, and it'll come to me. But you know, I stopped there like halfway between You know, it's like halfway between Bakersfield and Kingman. I stopped there, and it was just as dank and bad as I thought it was. Because I remember the last time I drove through there many, many years ago, and it was like way back then. The junction that I stopped at, they had like the world's largest McDonald's at that time, and now it looks pretty small to me. You know, I got in there and was like, oh, it looks just like a regular McDonald's now. Where'd the magic go, you know? Stopped and grabbed a bite. Good Lord, I mean, it was, it was interesting. I mean, after I left you that day, and the next morning I got up and went out and spent time hitting the last three vortexes. I had some wild experiences out there, and I ended up having a very unusual experience the next morning. I climbed as high as you can safely climb on Bell Rock, which you guys look out on Google, you can see Bell Rock. And I've got many pictures and videos to come. You know, everything's just stacked up right now. I've got just a pile of evidence to catalog and start analyzing. But I had a very strange experience. I got up to the second spire level, which is from the top. You get up there, and I climbed up this one area. I didn't think I'd be able to make it, and sure enough, there was a path all the way to the top. And it's strenuous. I mean, you're working your butt off. It took me 2 hours to get up there. And I got up and I sat on top of one of the spires looking down about 500 feet. And it was amazing. And, oops, somebody took me out of my chat room here. So I got in there and it was awesome. I mean, you know, I was sitting there and I closed my eyes and I thought, well, I'll try a little meditation. And I was taking video too and shooting different things for B-roll so I can do some interesting video work. And what ended up happening was I closed my eyes and I started seeing all these sparkles in my, and I thought, that's odd. I've never felt that when I've been doing meditation. And when I did that, the next thing that happened was I looked and I opened my eyes for some reason. And when I did, I was looking out and I saw everything in blue. Everything was colored blue. The red rock was blue. The green of the bushes and trees down below, which is just this postcard scenario that you have in front of you. And I'm seeing blue. And I had heard in the past that people have seen blue and violet light at the top of that place at night. But it was you know, I never in a million years expected to see a blue light, you know, like that in the daytime. And it was just, it was awesome. It lasted anywhere from, and you know, you lose track of time. I'd say, you know, from the time it started from about 5 minutes sitting down there to maybe about 15 minutes in, was how long that lasted, and it just slowly dissipated. And then I got my normal color vision back. But it felt like to explain to you guys, I mean, how weird this was. It was like if you were to sit inside of a gas stove flame and look out through the flame.
Well,
that's
what I was. The thought just came to me is that you were surrounded in the blue. You were in like a blue bubble.
Yeah, it was, and I mean, I've never had an experience like that. I mean, it's, you know, paranormal phenomena are very fleeting. Usually, you'll see something, and it will you know, just kind of, you know, be there and gone. This was sustained, and I actually did tests. I was closing my eyes, opening them back up. I was closed one eye, then the other. And I was still seeing the blue, and you know, and I'm not
from the inside out.
Yeah, well, it's you know, Bell Rock is well known for being a projection type, you know, electric vortex, and everybody that goes there, you know, with any degree of sensitivity feels the energy there, and it was just amazing to me to have that experience, and something that I'll never forget. What I do have is a lot of video from there. I taped the entire ascent, and I taped a good chunk of the descent. You know, so hopefully in there, maybe it affected the camera too. If it did it for me, hopefully it'll have happened with the camera, and I can substantiate this. 2 hours later, though, it's funny. I got down and I went downtown for a little bit. There's it's not quite Sedona; it's a different name, like Oak Creek City or something like that.
Yeah, Oak Creek.
Yeah. Oak Creek Canyon, yeah, it's there's a city there that's a little different than Sedona, and they're like 5 miles apart. But I dove out of there and ran over and grabbed a couple of Cokes and, you know, kind of kicked back a little bit. And then I went on F.O. Christie says, I'm so glad you're on. Oh, I better do the call out too. Dominica's here. Hi, Dom. Don Daly's here. Hi, Evelyn Hart, F.L. Christie. We got Gerber Daisy TM. I've got a guest listener and Karen and then UFO Geek. And then we've got Kathy as co-host. So good to see you all here on Sunday night and listening in. It looks like our two guests are not going to show. So we're just going to turn it into the All About the Grand Tour show. So we're going to go ahead and go with that. You know, I went ahead and went to a different vortex the next day or 2 hours later from this whole experience with the blue. And I went to Cathedral Rock, which is just around the bend from Bell. And it's kind of a female vortex. It's a yin vortex, negative energy, and not negative in a bad way, but just a different polarity. And it's said to, you know, stimulate your psychic centers and do all sorts of things. Well, I get out of the car and get parked, and you know, and Arizona's done a great job with, you know, there's, you know, ample parking, great trails into these places, so very easy to get into. And I get in there and I start walking, and I get about 700 feet in, and I'm wearing about a 30-pound pack with all my paranormal gear, in water and medical supplies and stuff, you know, because some of these trails take you back a ways and you're on your own. So I'm walking back there, and it's really not all that far. And all of a sudden, I catch motion off to my right, and I just caught it with my right eye, and I see red, and it looked like a red rectangle, like somebody had a rectangular red cloth, and this thing went running by, but I didn't see legs, I didn't see anything that would be indicative of a person outline. It was just like somebody, if you held up a blanket and went running sideways with it, that's what I saw. And it was there for maybe 2 seconds. I caught the motion, and I just started to turn my head, and it disappeared. And I know I saw it, you know. And I made a note of it. I didn't have video running at the time. I had audio though, so I've got it on audio. My reaction to that. There were things happening, you know. And shortly after that, I was actually in the vortex, and you could actually feel it. Third eye activation. If you know what the third eye is, you can actually feel this really powerfully in there. And that extends for about maybe 1,500 feet from the base of Cathedral Rock. So just an amazing set of experiences. I mean, those two were the most powerful vortexes I ran into in that area.
John? Dominica has a question in the chat room. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Kathy.
But she wants to know, was it a blue-blue, a purple-blue, or a turquoise-blue?
Oh, on Bell Rock, it was very interesting because, it was like looking through a very blue, kind of like a natural gas, where natural gas burns on your stove. That's the color blue I was looking through. And I felt encased in it. I mean, I opened my eyes to this, you know, and it was the last thing I expected. I expected to be seeing, oh, something's going on with my eyes. Maybe I've done too much work here, and I've opened my eyes, and I'm just seeing things. And the last thing I expected was blue, and I'm looking out at this blue, you know, and then everything filtered through. So the green was kind of filtering through blue green, you know, and the red was kind of getting canceled out, and the rock was all blue, you know. It was really friggin' weird. and it was just a slow effect and you felt like somebody was allowing you to see this. I mean, that was the feeling. And I was allowed to just sit in this and experience it for 15 minutes, and I feel very blessed and fortunate, you know. I didn't expect in a million years that I'd actually have a phenomena like that. Yeah, that would be that long-lasting. I mean, it was probably, of all the different interesting things I saw and experienced on that trip, that one will stick out for a bit, you know, other than, investigating the bar with Dominica, where we went in there, and there was some real strange stuff going on, and then we had, the Armagosa. The Armagosa Hotel with some of the negative and the fog, which oddly enough, the fog was also kind of a blue color, come to think of it. So, hopefully I caught video, enough video here that we'll be able to get a real nice travel log together of all the, different things that we got. And I'm sure we got a ton of EVP, especially that bar. Matt's bar was I don't know, Dom. I mean, Dom, did you feel, much in there yourself? I mean, because you girls were, you and Sandra were all wanting to eat at the end. Matt and I were back doing, looking at some of his tapes. And that going back to Prescott, and that bar was on a row called Whiskey Row, and Prescott, it's just got a lot of interesting, great history, a lot of violent history going back, real similar to Placerville out here, and but what's really neat is the town has a very peaceful energy now, very welcoming, and the people are all really great, and it's a walking town too, very friendly to dogs too. Ask about Dom about Jack sometime. Jack kind of stole my heart. Jack Russell, dog that it's a she. She's named Jack, and just totally took to me, and I took to her, and would let me rub her belly and everything. And I already miss her terribly, so I'll definitely be back out that way next year, so I could just not only see Dom but see Jack, but. It was great out there. Prescott had just intense energy about it, and it's funny. I even think, Dom, when we did some of the walkthroughs over there at the governor's mansion, which is like a stone's throw from Dominica's house, there's a governor's mansion. The old log cabin, original buildings, are all right there nearby. So we did, you know, I ran EVP several sessions through there. We walked by there every day. So I have got probably about 40 hours worth of audio, video, and
you're gonna be busy for a while.
Oh my God, I'm gonna need some help there. So I'll be soliciting some people to listen to some of my evidence to help me out, because my God, I'm just on a ton of this, you know. And it was a great experience doing this whole trip, and I just can't thank the people enough who participated, including you. I mean, you know, Karen showing up like that, and you know, you and me going off there to that well. I mean, you want to talk a little bit?
I love the well. I've been there many times. It just feels like just such a neat place. I just love being there. I always thought it was just an amazing place.
Yeah,
I always get a lot of good feelings from it.
Well, and what we're talking about is Montezuma's Well. If you get a chance to look at that, that's on, just type Montezuma's Well, and you'll see pictures of this place. Incredible place. It's like this big cavern that fell in on itself and created like a big lake. There's 1.2 million gallons of fresh water flow up out of this unknown water source feeding this, and this lake that's in here, in this cavern that's collapsed, and it's about 1,000 feet across. And so there's trails down into it, and caves, and actually what looked like little homes that the local Indians had actually built into the side of the caves. Now, some of these were ceremonial in nature, which pregnant women would go there to, I believe, to give birth in some of these rooms. And they were on these cliffs. It was really kind of...
Yeah,
like,
the houses are actually along the cliffs of this sunken in well, is what they call it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was really... I thought, oh, that's it. You know, we're going to get there. We'll see those. That's it. And Karen goes, oh, no, there's a trail off to the right. And then... You and I went down, and we actually got, kind of crossed the board. We crossed over. We were bad. We could be down, got to the bottom, and there's a boat. There's a little boat there that some of the scientists that go in there and measure different gases, because there's a lot of carbon dioxide that comes out. It's like 600 times more carbon dioxide in that water than normal. So there's no fish that live in there, because there's just other creatures can live in it, but not fish. But we were down in there, and there's all this, there's a whole bunch of more accessible cave homes and ruins there. And we actually climbed into some of the caves. And I remember
and John had to disturb the bats.
I didn't know what I was getting into. I shoved my camera through and
taking pictures. And the flash kept going off, and so the bats started stirring and flying around.
Oh, yeah. Well, I knew I had a bat when one flew right at my camera, and I was like, going, oh, crap. Bat. And then I see, and there's like all these ones hanging upside down, like about 10 feet in front of me. So I thought, well, what the hell? I'm just going to see if I can get them to really stir up. So I kept shooting. And, Karen's going, what are you doing? Are you nuts?
You leave them alone. You're pissing them off.
Well, it's funny. You and I climbed in there, too.
It was so neat back there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. There was. I actually almost fell into a 20-foot chasm there. I climbed up and over one area, and I suddenly put my hand down, and there was nothing there, and I caught myself, and then I shined my light down and looking, and I would have gone down further into these caves. And these caves go way back. So some of these
Knew they went back that far.
Oh, yeah. It looked like it went back at least 200 feet, just based on what – and I didn't bring a proper flashlight. I just had my LED.
Yeah.
So it looked like it went a long ways. And God knows what they had in there. They might have had weapons caches, or they might have been doing some sort of ceremonial work, probably a little bit of everything. But, some of it appeared to be natural. Other parts of it were, obviously man-made, man-cut. But that was like a wild – thing in that whole, you know, area. And part of and the lake actually flows out through a canal that was dug by the Indians through the mountain out and flows into another area that Karen took me out, you know, to. We actually climbed back out and then hiked around. And I was totally believing that I was going to run into anything more beautiful than what we'd already been into.
I told you it was like a different world down there.
Yeah. Tell them what it is. I mean, you know, just in your own words, what we went into there.
Well, you walk around the other side of the mountain to where the water comes out. And it's just, you walk around like, I guess it's the side of a cliff. There's a path. And it's right near a little river or creek is what they call it. And it's just tall, big, huge trees. So it's all shaded.
Yeah.
And you just go along the side of the mountain and you see where the water comes out flowing, and it's just beautiful, clear water, and it's nice and cool, which we had to, we stuck our feet in. John dunked his head in the water.
Because so hot.
But it was so much cooler. It's so much cooler, and it's just so peaceful, and it's just very beautiful down on the other side of the well. The upper side is like desert and hot. Down there, you're all amongst trees and water, and it's just very pretty and very serene, and it's just a beautiful place.
It was very spiritual feeling. Mm-hmm. It felt like a natural church to me. Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, I see. Yeah, Kathy's going to hang up here. Kathy, we love you. She's listening. So, what we have, let's see, I'm trying to remember where we're at here. Oh, yeah, on this whole, that the spiritual nature of that area, the water was, you know, we actually followed the trail up to where the water was flowing out from the crater on the other side. Which,
it comes
was
right
about,
out from underneath the rock, the mountain.
Yeah, it's like 150 feet back in, and then you run into the actual lake. And so, you know, this water flows out, and it's absolutely pure. I took a taste of it, and it was very good. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the water at all. And I just looked and went, the heck with it. I'm going to put my head in this and cool down because it was so hot up at the top. So I did. I just immersed myself in it, and then you know, Karen stuck her feet in, and we were just, you know, like a couple of kids.
We see a splashing water and water fight.
Oh, yeah, I got a water fight at the end. Yeah, I did it. I started it, yeah. But, but it was, you know, it was so peaceful in there, and there's sycamore trees. I never really had seen sycamores before.
Huge,
and,
just
and
huge.
It was one. Remember that one?
That one, I mean, is just, it's, how big around would you say that thing is?
That thing had to have at least a maybe a 20-foot circumference if you really looked at it, because it's just so big, and it grows sideways right
out of the mountain.
Out of the mountain sideways,
right where the water comes out,
right up. Yeah, and it goes up maybe about 150 feet. I mean,
yeah.
This tree is huge, and it would move, and you would hear these big cracks and groans, you know, and the other trees all through there were rubbing each other. We were hearing these horrible squeaking noises, and,
yeah.
You know, we were looking at each other like, what the hell's that? You know,
What's that? Oh, it's just a tree.
We were doing EVP down there, so, you know, I am absolutely certain there are going to be spirits that we ran into throughout that whole area.
Well,
you know,
tell them what. I mean, I got impressions too while we were there, and so did you. And I got my dowsing rods out and was asking, as John was getting these impressions, I was asking out loud, you know, to see if they would confirm it. And the spirit that John was connecting with was actually answering our questions with my dowsing rods. Of everything that he was getting, she was saying yes to with my dowsing rods.
Yeah, this was the woman that was pregnant. What I got was the impression of a pregnant woman. I think it was, as I said, 6 months. I think she was 6 months along when she passed.
A young
she was
woman.
Getting there to be ready to give. She was going there like for whatever reason they brought her down there, and she passed down there, and that's the impression I got. And it was there was just this you know, it was very sad, you know, but she was hanging around there, and she didn't stay there all the time. It was like a visitation thing. She just but she really mourned the baby, and you know, the baby's fine on the other side and all that, but it was just, she really liked what the place she was in and her
and
life
plus,
that she had.
We both picked
you know.
Up that she had had another son. She had had
yeah.
a young boy also
yeah.
that was alive when she died.
Yeah, she had a baby.
Even I got that. Surprisingly.
And then she died at, I think, 22 or 23 years of age, and it was just there was some disease that got her. It was nothing that, she, you know, it was like some virus, something got her. And, you know, she was sick, and it was very sudden. She was there, and then she was, you know, 2 days later, she was gone kind of thing. And, you know, and I'm inclined to say Hanta or something like a Hanta virus or something, which is common throughout that area. So
yeah.
It just was real sad. But at the same time, she seemed very comfortable. I mean, there was no emotion other than a slight wistfulness about that life, the way it ended. But you definitely got the impressions that they were very peaceable people there. They weren't
yes.
a warlike. It was not a warlike tribe. And what tribe is that that's in there? I'm talking like not the Yavapai.
Sikawa.
Yeah. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, they were very peaceful people, and they were real more into agriculture than anything else. They grew beans and different corn and this and that. And their real big thing was they were great canal builders, and they liked to build cliff homes. And they were really into the defense, keeping their defenses up by living up high. And they you know they were really good at this kind of engineering work. And this stuff is still standing to this day. I mean, that whole tunnel out of that crater, you know, and here we are, you know, today even can still walk up to this irrigation ditch that comes out. It's absolutely pure, clean water and well-engineered ditch that is just, it's actually beautiful. I mean, you know, there's roots and things all growing in there. And it almost looks natural, except you can tell it's a little too straight, you know.
Sinequa.
Yeah, but it just you just felt good energies all around, and even over at the Montezuma's castle, which was it was only like 11 miles away, and there was a band of about 50 to 100 that would be there at any one time, living up on those cliffs, and these homes are what 150 feet up.
Yeah.
From the base of us, you know, straight up this cliff, and they were using ropes and ladders, and they had little trails that they could switch back their way up, and they lived up in there, and they would live on, actually, most of the time they'd be in the shade. That's why they did it, I think, a lot of it, is they wanted to be in the shade.
Well, it keeps them cool in the summer and warm in the winter. They use the natural formation of the rocks so they don't have to build like back walls and stuff. They only have to build front parts and sides, less to build. So they use the natural form of the mountains to build their homes into. That's why they did that.
Yeah, and they did such a, you know, what was neat was they did such a great job with it. I mean, that it still exists quite a bit of it still exists to this day. Now, there's a lot of it where there's only remnants. You know, at the lower sections, which are more accessible. What was striking to me was you and I were doing some work, you know, down towards the end of it before we left. And I just got the feeling, one of the things that was communicated to me just when I went into the altered state was that there was this one male spirit was talking about, this will be used again. And I'm going, whoa. You mean, like, you had it before, and it was like, he's going, yeah, and it's going to be, there will come a time and this will all have to be done again, and we're going to go through this again, and this will all be, copied essentially and reused in the same manner we did, and our people will be back here. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. There seems to be like a prophecy, so I'd like to find more. Oh. Am I putting you to sleep? Oh, no. I don't want to do that. I'll start talking with a more raspy voice. Sorry, Sid. I'm sorry. I'm putting people to sleep.
How mine is.
You know why? Because I am so tired from this trip. What's that?
I've kind of lost mine a little bit.
Oh, my. Well, I mean, overall, though, I mean, that was a really neat day you and I had there. I mean,
I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah,
and,
I mean.
And I also remember we talked to a couple of spirits there at the castle, which was.
Yeah, awesome. I'm trying to. Do you remember the specifics on that? Because I mean, I have.
Yes.
You know, I was,
you said
many things
it was
that hit
like.
Me.
You want to say a medicine man, but the woman you said was kind of like a healer, was his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I
we sat down,
that.
And I was giving him some of my peace pipe. And you said that, you know, they were getting a real kick out of us. They seemed to like us.
Yeah, they were the ones that came up, but there was more of them that were standing back just watching, and that's the kind of the impression I've got of these Senequas, you say. They're very polite kind of people. That was the impression, and that they stood back and watched you, and they were really looking at how you
acted.
Well,
I kind of took John off the beaten path again. I kind of like doing that. We kind of went off the beaten path away from people, and apparently John says it seemed to have made them curious of us.
yeah, because you took off to the right. We went, when you walk out to this part of this whole monument, you end up running into there's like a big river, and there was not a lot of flow going, but there was enough that, you know, if you were living out there, you'd be in Fat City. I mean, there'd be plenty of water. There's plenty of vegetation and sea, you know, you could live out there. Wouldn't be the most exciting existence, but you could do it. But, you know, they were, you know, she took off to the right and stepped over kind of a barrier area. And I was looking it over thinking, okay, I'm waiting for the, you know, somebody will grab her and then I'll just say, you know, I'll tell them, oh, no, she's she wasn't paying attention, sorry. And then also I realized, hey, there's no science. Let's go ahead. And so I jumped in there with her. And we went right and ran into a bunch of different old ruins out there. And then just started booking back left. And then we walked all through what I think would have been probably some of their places that they grew their food and that kind of thing. And that's when we started running, feeling like.
We started talking, you know, I'm calling them out. Come follow us. And
yeah,
I guess they did.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you know, two of them were the more forward, like I guess the leaders, you know, that you know, real tribal leaders that came, you know, forward to talk to us. The rest of them were real polite and just stood back, and it was interesting. You could just feel eyes on you, you know, the whole way, and they're thinking, you know, and we were like, you know, I kind of know the some of the terms some of the Midwestern tribes use, you know, Wasatchi, I think is their word for white. These two crazy white people are looking around, you know, talking to them and not just, you know, coming and taking pictures and leaving, you know, going, oh, that was exciting. So we were really trying to get to know them. And they don't get that often. So. That's a good thing to do when you're out, you know, doing investigations and stuff. Really put yourself out there and put your best foot forward and your mouth forward with some nice words, and I think you'll get results, you know. I mean, they see what's in your heart.
I kind of look at it as like, you know, if you were just meeting a regular person for the first time or you're going to somebody's house, you know, you're polite, you ask questions, you know, you engage in small talk, that kind of thing, you know, and I think maybe that's kind of how I look at it, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly
kind of
it.
Treat them like just regular people, you know.
Yeah, they're just people without bodies, and they are around. I mean, that's the thing. It's so difficult not to find, you know, spiritual, you know, phenomena out there and haunts. To me, it's the norm. It's not the exception. So, you know, when you do acknowledge them and you do it with the right energy and you walk in, you know, even if you don't have gifts, if you just are just decent to them, they're going to come back and give you something in return, you know. But overall, good day. I mean, I and then we, what else did we do? Did we, I think that was about it. I think we
parked.
Yeah, we had lunch, and then you had to get back to Phoenix,
yeah.
And And then I jetted back to do my thing. But have you listened to any of your evidence? Did you get any of your stuff?
Oh, I haven't. I've been busy. my son's home from Kuwait for 2 weeks. It's an R&R. So friends of mine wanted me to bring him over to their place and party and, you know, buy him drinks and just celebrate. So that's where I was all last night with him. And I came home and got maybe 3 hours sleep, and then I went on a bike ride. I was back. I got up at 5:30 and was back out on a bike at by 6:30 this morning. And guess where we went? We went to Camp Verde, back where we were.
We drove up
to Camp Verde. We stopped off at the Cliff Castle Casino and had breakfast. I gambled just a wee bit. We were only there for maybe 20, 30 minutes and gambled a little bit. Then we went to Jerome.
I got to go to Jerome.
It's a cool city. You know, we went to a bar called the Spirit Bar, and it's an old place. And I was like, damn, I wish I had my recorder. Damn, I was just kicking myself. If I didn't know we were going to Jerome, or I would have brought it. And I went to, and this is an old building that we were in. It was old. And it looked like it, I don't know, it had like a stage thing in the back. It looked like it might have been an old, you know, saloon with a stage kind of thing. I don't know. I went to the bathroom, and you know how they call water closets?
Yeah.
Well, the bathroom was a water closet. It was just a little closet. And the whole walls, top to bottom, floor to ceiling, everywhere, was everybody writes on it, you know, writes their name and the date they were there and, you know, write a little something. The whole wall was just covered in writing, and it's just this little tiny room.
Oh, my God.
But I was just kicking myself that I didn't bring my recorder. I thought, man, I betcha. I betcha, because I just felt that there was something there, and I was like, oh. But, you know, I probably wouldn't turn out good because there was a lot of people there and stuff. But then it started to rain, and we got hailstorms. So we're sitting on the bike, and we're waiting for the rain to kind of die down. And once it died down a little bit, our friends took off and went the backside, and they got caught in the hail. We waited a little while, and we decided to go back the way we came, but we got caught in rain. And we had to stop and wait it out for about a half an hour, and then we took off again in the rain. When the rain died down a little bit and the hail stopped hailing, we took off for the sun, had to head for the sun, and we got out of the rain. So,
you know, I was wondering about that because I was seeing the cloud build up. You know, my last night, I was looking and saw clouds, and I thought, is that?
It happened really quickly.
Yeah, it just started building.
There, it was fine. Just when we started to get to the top, it was like it just dropped 10 degrees all of a sudden. And, yeah, the next thing we knew, I mean, there was one little dirt black cloud coming over. Next thing we knew, the whole town is covered in dark clouds, and it was pouring and hailing.
Yeah.
Just that quick.
I was seeing it when I got out of Flagstaff. The morning started off just cloudy. Once I got about 2 hours in, I was racing a whole line of, for a good, probably 350 miles, I was racing the, to my immediate west. I just kept skirting the edge of this thing, and it was like chasing me the whole way out. You know, I got a little few sprinkles on the car, and then when I got home, you know, there was clouds all around here, and I woke up this morning, and everything was wet. it caught up to here, and so, yeah, it's definitely... you know, I got the last gasp of summer right up to the big end on this whole trip, and it was great. But, you know,
we got a little soaked because we were on a bike. We were on a motorcycle.
Yeah. I mean, you...
So we got soaked.
You know what's funny is that you were talking about, you know, the carrying a recorder around. You remember that Sansa recorder I had, that little black thing I clipped on my neck there? You know,
perfect.
Yeah, yeah, something to share with you guys is like if you go out to Amazon and just type the word Sansa, S-A-N-S-A, These are a little clip-on MP3 player, and I didn't realize it when I ordered it for my mother. I bought my mother a little one so she could listen to meditations. She wanted to, you know, get into that. And when I got it, I opened it up and I was setting it up for her, and then I found out this thing's got an FM radio in it. It's got a built-in, you know, recorder, and it's got you could put a little micro SD card in it and extend it. So I liked it so much, I ordered myself one, and I wear it everywhere now. So I clip it on, and I'm always ready for an investigation. You know, I don't have to have anything else, just, you know, do EVP. I'm all set to go. So I highly recommend that technique to anybody. If you're going to go out and do that kind of work, get this little teeny clip-on recorder. It just is, you know, it's like $35. You know, I mean, it's, you know, that's the cheapest I think you could ever find, and it's amazing. I mean, you just, you know, two clicks and you're recording. And so I used it all over the place, and I got a ton of evidence on it. And, you know, it was, you know, right now I've got, 6 gigabytes of recording capacity on that thing. So it's really nice, and it just goes and goes and goes, and then you just plug it in and recharge it. Doesn't even have to it's just plug it to any USB with the right cable, and you're charging it. And it charges really fast, so I was impressed. But you know, I don't know. Let's talk about.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. You know, it's a shame it was raining. I would have liked to really walk around the town more. Never really gotten to really explore the town that well, and so it would have been nice while I was up there. So I'm just have to take another trip up there sometime, I think.
Yeah, you know, I think what I'm going to do is, because I'm thinking about flying out that way just for a real fast trip in March, and I may just fly straight into Phoenix, and then you know, get a car and then just, you know, tool around there for just a few days. Maybe
I can pick you up. You can stay here if you want.
Okay. Well, I'll take you up on that because, yeah, I'd like to just, you know, grab a rental and then just we go off and, you know, have ourselves, like, you know, some investigations around that area. You know, yeah, because I look at the Southwest prices and they're better. And trying to drive, I had a great time taking the Mustang, but good Lord, that's a long drive.
It's a long drive.
Yeah, you know, because you did it from my house.
Well, yeah, and that took me, 16 hours with all the detours I had to take.
I just have one thing to say. I am never, ever, ever going to take that dirt road again.
I took John on the dirt road way to the well because it was more straighter shot. But, it's very bumpy.
Well, it's like this, you know, these people never heard of grading a road. So, I'm sitting here with all my gear.
They do it that way on purpose, though, John. They make those little bumps in there on purpose. It's for traction and for that, for when it's wet and that. But, yeah, I find that it's really hard on the body.
It shook my poor little Sarah almost to pieces. And I came out, and I was talking like Johnny Cash by the time I got out of my name's John. I'm here from Ghost Rider Paranormal.
That's why I wanted to make sure I went to the bathroom before we went down that road.
I know. I was like, well, you know, and come to think of it, when we first got in there, you and I turned into that sunken area. There was that sunken home.
The pit.
And what this was one of they built homes that were sunken into the ground so they could take advantage of the cool.
Like a grass hut kind of thing on the top.
Yeah, and from a paranormal perspective, you know, it was interesting because I pulled out my EMF, you know, for daytime work. I use a tri-field, and I pulled out. I'm getting readings that are way above normal, and I'm thinking, what the hell? And I'm looking around, and the closest power line is maybe 700 feet away, and so I'm thinking, okay, maybe we got something going on here, and. Then I would walk, and it would get stronger when I put it up to any metal around the what the state of Arizona had, you know, in this whole covering that they put on. So finally, I noticed as we'd walk closer to the power line, the readings would go up, and then you know, Karen and I both walked out and we debunked it. And it turned out to be a very, very just amazingly powerful EM field. Extending out probably a good 1,000 feet, you know, from this one stinking power line, which I've never seen
and
that kinda, before.
Yeah, and it was reflecting off the metal barred fence that they had around the place.
Yeah, anything metal around there was just amplifying it and creating all sorts of, you know. But you know, and it was just odd. And for a while there, I thought we really had something, you know. But it is a, you know, the thing is, you know, even though that it, we debunked it, it's also a hell of a power source for any phenomena in the area.
That's
so
true.
We, you know, I have not done any analysis of any of the evidence we have, you know, and I would expect we'll probably get a few things there. Who knows? We may even get some of the original, you know. I've never done any work in an Indian site before. So we may get some.
I'm very curious to see if we got anything.
Yeah, I think we're going to get some things in there. Especially, you know, we did like what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 or 5 Indian sites, you know, unique places. So I'm sure we're going to get something, and it may even be in a language that's not, you know, that we'd have to have somebody who knew the language interpret it for us. Because
yeah.
I've had that happen. You know, we've had Chinese, I've had Mandarin being spoken, I've gotten German, Japanese, picked that up out. Yeah, oddly enough, Japanese, 2 miles, you know, 7 miles from me, where I'm at right now, the first Japanese colony in the United States was located. And I got Japanese, basically the equivalent of telling you to get the hell out. They always say that, don't they? Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, get out of here. Oh, now, Dom, I'm going to jump over to Dom for a second, too, with you on here. Dom was talking water, the great mystery. Dom was playing, if any of you ever get the chance to visit Dominica, here I am, like, a volunteer in the place. She's got this, number one, she's got one of the nicest beds in the whole world in this very unique place. It's actually in the dining room, so I slept in the dining room. Next to the haunted kitchen, and but she's got more DVDs that'll make you think than anybody I've ever met. And every night we would sit and watch these DVDs, and she had one on water, and it was so interesting. I mean, water kept figuring throughout this whole trip because it's such a big thing in the desert. But what was interesting was to find out about structuralized water. You know, something for you guys out there who are listening, you know, now and on the archives. Read up on, and Dom, I can't remember the title of that DVD. If you could put that, I think is it, Water, the Great Mystery. And it was really a good DVD because it talked about the things we do to water, and we think it's just water is water. We don't think it's water as a living, breathing, spiritual substance, and it really is. And this DVD showed that if you pray for, if you take water and you put your energy into it and you put your intent into it and you ask it to be healthy for you, it actually assumes different shapes. The water molecules align themselves in what's called structuralized water. And that, curiously, is the same for holy water. And there's some really interesting things that come out of that. And this is why a lot of people in different religions bless their food and bless their water. It's just for this reason.
Well, you know, John, I think that's part of the feeling of Montezuma as well. Because
yeah.
I think that's what they did there. They blessed that water. And I know that I've heard that people have actually believed that that's healing water. Like the Indians there will go there and go to where the water was coming out, and they believe mm-hmm. that water to be able to heal people.
Yeah, with the amount of carbon dioxide in the water, I mean, that's one thing. But, you know, and when I tasted it, it was actually a sweet-tasting water. It was very good. And I felt perfectly safe with it. And I agree. I mean, the spiritual intent that, you know, that went on there, and I believe I would believe even to this day that the tribe, that particular tribe, is still using that lake for their rites and doing the things they do. I'm sure that the government just steps aside and they can do whatever they want to do in there.
And that's probably why we get that feeling of like it's such a holy place.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it felt like a church there. And so it was, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, is so markedly different between that and then you take a look at, let's say, New York City or Las Vegas water, you know, where it's all been piped through and it's all being, and the DVD showed it so well, you know, everything's right angles and strange turns, and it really makes the water go kind of lose its lose those shapes. And they showed, they take the water and they freeze it and show what these shapes would look like. And it would be all these horrible shapes. And then you would show, they would show holy water, and when it would freeze, it would turn into these little perfect geometric shapes of crystals, like what you get with snow.
Oh, that sounds neat.
Oh, yeah. And if you said certain words to it, if you said, what was it, love and gratitude were the two highest vibrational words that you could speak to water. And it was so interesting to see how the water would react to that. And it turns out that, I thought about it driving on the drive from Prescott over to Sedona. I was really thinking about that DVD. And it just struck me that matter is spirit. You know, that matter, all matter, whether it be water, you know, it's as long as we're putting our intent into it,
right.
We bring that, we bring it up to a higher vibrational level, and it does assemble
exactly.
itself in a way that's more conducive to us.
Did she have any similar DVDs, like for, you know, plants and flowers? Because I have actually seen the same type of thing where people have done the love and gratitude for flowers and plants, and the other ones they just kind of left, and the ones that they had talked to and prayed and said that to would grow and bloom bigger, and the others wouldn't, the ones that were ignored.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a community called Findhorn, if I remember right, or it's something, it sounds like, I think it is Findhorn, that was done in, I think it's in the north of England, near Scotland, in a very inhospitable place. This bunch of people decided they were going to take it's in a book called The Secret Life of Plants. If you look that up on Amazon, great story.
I've heard of that.
And what they did is they decided that plants were Findhorn, yeah, that's it. What they decided to do was to take the take and put their intent into and trust in spirit and in the plants to be able to provide for them. But they picked a spot that was actually, no one would believe that you could do this. And they created this community, and they did a great job with it. It turned out to be a very successful experiment. And I'm not sure if it's still in existence, but they proved their point. You know, they proved their point that the intent and love that human beings in these plants, which, guess what, are made mostly of water, just like we are, that was enough. That was enough to put our those particular emotions into it. The emotions have a significant impact on the life forms, and so they were able to thrive in soil that was absolutely wrong for the conditions, and then start growing and making that soil richer and richer, and they became a loving place. It was just in this oasis of chaos, here's this beautiful, remarkable place that everybody was talking about. Oh, and Dominica is saying, yeah, the Findhorn Garden. Yep, see, I knew about that. I knew about that, Dom. I'd actually done some reading on that. I just found that book the other day. I was going around through cleaning my place, and I found that book again. You know, the Secret Life of Plants. So check that out. I mean,
plants are, you know, they're, people look at them as like inanimate things, but they're actually living creatures, you know?
Yeah,
they're
actually
a living, thriving being, you know? And that's why you talked about trees, you know? You see, when we've gone out to the graveyards and stuff, and I see these big trees, and I go and talk to them. But I feel a fondness for these old big trees, and I will actually go up and kind of hug them or just kind of lean on them and pat them, and I talk to them and say hi and thank you for, you know, your shade and for being here, you know. I feel like they're alive, and they are. They're living things.
It's so funny because when I talked with, when I was staying with Dominica, she took me out to there's a courthouse just around the corner from her, and we walked down there. And she introduced me to these trees, and there was another one over on kind of river bank area that you can just dive down into, and she was showing me this one tree that would give her gifts, you know, and you know, as a guy, I'm looking at it going, okay. But you know, I keep my mind open. So I actually sat in, you know, she had me try a couple of different trees, and I parked myself in there, and I just opened up my senses to see what would happen. And I actually felt the energy of this tree, and it was really, it felt like it just wrapped around you like a big blanket.
Yeah, see, that's what I get from these big old trees. I get just a nice feeling from them, a fondness, you know? I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah.
You sit there and you think about how old these trees are, what they have seen, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They see more than we ever will. You know, they live a lot longer than we do. They've been through a lot more than we have, you know?
Yeah, I just got the feeling that there's like an intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, if you saw, what's the name of that movie that had the, trying to think of the name of it, had the blue aliens and they were living on Pandora.
Oh, the one we saw.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now because you said it, I can't think of it.
Avatar.
Avatar, that's it, yes.
Yeah, and yes. How the Avatar, they had all the plants were basically a big neural network, and it was just basically a giant biological computer. And I really believe that is actually a pretty good analogy for what we run into with, you know, whole communities of plants. There is an intelligence there. You know, just because you can walk up with a chainsaw and take a tree down and then burn it for wood and all that, and that's what we've always done. You got to stop and think about, you know, the act of doing that. I look at it a little differently now. I'm pretty careful with our trees here. We've got a lot of them that are going through a big die-off right now, and there's nothing we can do about it. So we do have to cut them down. But I'm very, you know, the ones that look like they're going to make it, you know, I want to preserve them. But
I had to chop down a tree in my backyard. And the whole time I'm doing it, I'm apologizing to the tree. I'm like, I'm so sorry I have to do this. I felt really sad that I had to do that.
Yeah, it's, I've got like a bunch of white oak right out the door here that I know I have to take down eventually because the bases are rotting and they have to come down. I mean, there's no getting around it. And then there's another one that's just, I've been watching it. It's down about at a 45-degree angle, and it's laying on top of another tree, and it's just got to go. So there's a whole bunch of them, you know, here in the next 2 months I get to do a lot of saw work on. But it's just, you know, it's sad, but, you know, that's the way it works when you're living in close proximity.
Everything has its time, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, what I'm wanting to do is take and move some, go in and plant some other types of trees in, too, and just kind of, you know, take up the slack with that, especially after the damage we took from these storms here last year. It's, you know, but actually it did open up my yard where right now it's pretty much a big mess, but I'm putting in the sun gardens for next year. We're going to get that already now. So, but really, I mean, what was so strange was though was to sit into that tree, you know, with Dawn there, and she told me what to look for, and I just sat in there and I was like, wow, that's different, and it didn't feel like it was talking to me, but you know, you just felt this energy.
Energy.
Yeah.
Kind of a wise, loving energy. I guess that's kind of how I'd describe it. Comforting energy.
It felt like it was aware of my presence, and it, you know, I think the way Dawn was talking, it was like, you know, ask its permission, you know, kind of a thing. And it just seemed to, it was like, oh, you're cool. Okay. All right. I'll sit in.
you know, that's just so cool you said that because, you know, I always thought I was a little strange, you know, getting feelings like that from trees and feeling that way. So that's really kind of cool that I'm not the only one.
No, I just think that, life is, you know, in it's all holy in its own way. And, you know, trees,
Think about it. Think about it. We would not be here. We would not be able to, you know, sustain without these plants and without these trees.
You're right. And even the smallest life form, it's funny because the whole time I was in Prescott, you know, I was very aware of life and walking with Dawn, you know, Dawn makes you think. I mean, she's really this powerful intellect, and I found myself thinking about things I hadn't thought of for a long time, and we're walking along and there's a lot of ants in Prescott. Everywhere you look is an ant colony. And so I found myself walking, and she was laughing at me because I was like stepping around these ants, because I became very aware of, well, you know that ant's like important, you know, so I'll watch where I'm walking, you know. So I'm like skipping around, walking around, you know. She's looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm looking after the ants, you know. I'm a sensitive New Age guy, give me a break. I'm observing ant colonies out there, but you know, I'm sure some people exterminate them and all that. But you know, when you look at that, they're part of the community too, and they're interacting with the plants, and they have their own purpose for being around. But not only that, I would have felt bad, you know. So.
Oh, that's what I always tell them. I say, you stay out in the yard, just don't come in my house. If you come in my territory, then you're asking for trouble. But if you want to stay out here, that's fine. Don't come in my house.
Well, you know, it was such an interesting trip, though. I mean, there were so many pieces of it that were so different, and yet, you know, throughout the whole thing was this common thread of, the desert. You know, everything was desert where I went on this particular tour, and the awareness of water was such a big thing. You know, and then Dom bringing forth the whole revelation about structuralization of water and that kind of stuff. But when you go around all through the desert there and you see how people live and what they do and how they treat water and how they treat the environment, and for the most part, they're pretty much in harmony with it. And then the spiritual aspects, too, are very powerful. It seems like when you live out there, you know, in more wide open spaces, people become very they're very inward directed out there. It's California. It's a little bit more. We're external. Oh, don't forget to see. What is this? Dom says, don't forget seeing us at that Mountain Club property. Will be a hoot and help me. Oh, I'm trying to remember that Mountain Club property. You got to help me with that, Don. I'm not sure what you're talking about. My brain's like still recovering from the drive. But you know, overall, I mean, you know, when you look at the whole the commonalities of all of it, these people, except for Las Vegas struck me as the kind of the exception. You know, it was so big city, it reminded me of kind of a New York with a lot of sunshine, you know, and it was very confused energy there. But around it, you know, Armagosa, you know, the surrounding communities of Vegas. But not downtown proper. And then all the way out, you know, Prescott and Arizona, Arizona especially was very, you know, the people are very aware. And I didn't find anybody there that was like not spiritual. They seemed to be very, very, very intent and very purposeful in the way they live. And that's what I really like about it. And that's why, you know, I'm going to move there is because of that. It's just, yeah, everybody I talked with was really decent, kind, generous people, and you know. But the general gist of the whole experience was these aware folks walking around, even in out to California and you know surrounding Nevada communities and things like that. Very tied to the land and very tied to understanding, you know the things around them a little more. And, you know, Zoltar's house. Yeah, the intentional. Yeah, Dom is trying, and she's really working on this, for an intentional community and wellness center. I should get you on, Dom, as my guest for one of these upcoming shows to talk about this. And it was like she introduced me to this guy named Zoltar. He was telling people, I am not Zoltar. And I said, well, gee, my name is Guitar. And she loved that. She's still like laughing about that. So anyway, she's crazy. Yeah, and by the way, Dom, that was a hell of a barbecue we did the other night. Yeah, they gave me the food to cook, so I cooked a hell of a barbecue, and we had every meat known to man, and I cooked the. I had a hell of a time with the corn. The corn I didn't do so good with. The corn was like a that was tough, but actually I did get it at the end because I directly barbecued it. You know, the foil thing, trying to do foil on a barbecue, you can't see what the hell the corn's doing, so I just went straight up, straight on, and that worked out. Yeah, my name's Guitar. She's laughing. But, you know, I mean, I'm going to go back very, you know, in the early part of next year, we'll go back. And I'll be in Arizona a couple of times, you know, at a minimum, and spend some time down south. You know, I'll do like a mini vacation in March, and then we'll do the more long vacation in late April time frame for doing the transcontinental tour over to New York and then back. And so that's coming up. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I got home. One of the first things I did was when I was finally kind of relaxing a bit, I watched the episode with Sharon Coyle. I've got it stopped right because I'm going to watch it again, Ghost Adventures with Rolling Hills Asylum. Oh, my God, Sharon. I mean, Sharon's a dear friend, and she made me swear in blood for like 3 months not to tell a soul about her trying to buy that property. And and she used to run Journey Paranormal, and I think she still does keep her hand in it. But she's got her, everything just full tilt, keeping Rolling Hills going. And she's out there in the northern part of New York, not too far from Canada. And it's just, if you watch that episode, it's insane what she's in the middle of. And we get to go there. I get to stay there and hunt there for like three or four days. We're going to just kick butt out there. But to see what's that?
I want to go.
Oh, man, yeah, trust me, join the line because, I mean, that place is crazy. It's funny, I've talked to her several times, and she's told me, they come out on command, John. And I'm like, what do you mean command? She'll just go, hi, guys, can you come out? And these shadows will start coming out. I mean, that's how crazy it is. There's just this, it's just, there's so many, there was like, I think 1200 deaths, that they've got registered and many, many more, so there's thousands of bodies on the property and it goes out beyond because a lot of the old property was sold off. So there's other places that are outside of that where there's bodies all buried around and her garden area, she knows she's got bodies in. So she might be growing her garden out there with, skeletons all around. I don't know what she's going to be doing. I mean, good Lord, So, she's going to go through her first winter out there, though. So, I won't be able to get out this year, but I'll definitely be, out there in the spring and get a real shot at looking this thing over. And then we're going to head out to the Shanley Hotel. Kathy and me and whoever else joins up with us wants to, do the driving. We'll be taking the big truck, The big truck's going and then the trailer. We're taking the big truck,
cool.
So we can save on that. So, we'll have multiple drivers. We can pretty much tool straight across the country and, get there pretty quick and then really get a sense of, what the heck New York's all about, especially upstate. I don't want to go to New York City, but upstate and once you get into rural New York, it's incredibly there's a lot of history there and a lot of haunted places. So I just get a good feeling about it. I mean, you want to go on this thing?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
I want to see Kathy and hang with Kathy.
Oh,
we gotta have our margaritas.
Well, I'll just drive the truck straight out with the teardrop then in tow straight to Phoenix and meet up with you guys, and then we'll.
And don't forget, we have to visit Scott.
Scott, brain dead here.
From New York, from the.
Oh yeah, we're going to be going. Yeah, from Ghost Hunters Incorporated. Yeah, Scott is going to wants us to stop at the Civil War battlefields. That is definitely on a must stop thing. Yeah, we're going to, we'll book across the middle part of the country and just scoot across. But once we get to that area, yeah, we're stopping. We're going to definitely check that out, and hook up with them and hook up with some really, that'll be neat to hook up with another very experienced team. GHI is they're really neat group. They've been around longer than anybody. I think the GHI goes back probably 35 years. I mean, when Alan first started it. So, I mean, he is uber experienced in this field and very humble. That's the thing I like about him. And Scott, is just, he's kind of fresh on the scene with them, but he's really excited and loves doing the work and has become a big part of the team there. So it'll be great to hook up with them. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, we'll be doing the Shanley, and then we'll be spending time over in Rolling Hills, with Sharon. And she's going to take us around some other haunted spots around that area, too. So So we're going to definitely get some of the best of the best from the East Coast of these United States and really get to see it. So I am going to save every bit of vacation I can for that one. And we'll try to spread it out so that we can get a lot of weekends in, so we can get there and do our thing and then get back all in under a couple of weeks, which is what it's going to take, to do the whole deal. And I see Renee on. We may actually get to stop and see Renee in Kentucky because she's moving to Kentucky sooner rather than later. And so, Renee Martine, our remote viewer,
she's moving to Kentucky.
On. Yep, she's moving to Kentucky. So she's going to be studying, I think, under a very experienced medium there, and she's got a new job and everything, so that's all worked out for her. That's going to be great.
Oh, that's awesome, Renee. Congratulations. Way to go, girl.
Yeah, so she's well on her way, so I'm going to be getting to see her this coming weekend before she goes. So it's like, so she'll be going. She's still on the team, but she's just going
to
be.
Renee, don't forget to send me the name of that workbook you were telling me about.
Oh, yeah.
You were going to do that.
Yeah, well, Renee's doing that.
Yeah, she had
There you go, Law of One.
Law of One. Okay, thank you, girl.
Yeah, so.
Oh, John, I wanted to ask you something before we go.
Yeah, we got 13 minutes. We're good. We got plenty of time.
I watched, I don't know if anybody watched it, the Destination Truth this week. I don't think anybody did you see it?
Yeah, actually I did. I've got it on tape here, and I was watching a bunch of them. Which one was it?
It's the new one. It was just this Thursday. They actually did what they said was like the first underwater EVP session.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that I did watch that, and I was very impressed with that. And
was that kind of cool?
I looked at that, and I thought, I've got enough equipment and knowledge. I could build hydrophones, and I've actually played around with hydrophones in the past, and I thought about it, and I'm going, God, we've got like riverboats and stuff where there's been sunken riverboats out in the delta and things like that, and thought about, wow, that would be cool to throw an ROV over, and just have a hydrophone and then see what you pick up. That engine noise, that's what got me.
Yeah. It just kind of struck me because it was like, I never really thought of that, because you think of these underwater things that it's water, nothing's there, I just didn't really think, but yeah, if people died there, their spirits could still be there. And it's like, yeah, it's just like, wow, that is an awesome idea.
Well,
it really hasn't been delved into.
It's unfortunately, one thing I'll say, Destination Truth had the mass marketing to do this, but 2 years ago there was another team in Florida that was doing underwater EVP, and they were. Oh yeah, this is not new. It's just that the community is starting to wake up to the fact that these things are available and that there are things happening out there now. GRI, I mean, we went out this year, and it was Renee and me, and I can't remember his name. I'm just brain dead here. Steve, her friend Steve, went out, and we did a cave investigation, and we got EVPs.
I wanted to go to that one.
Yeah, and we went in, and we were getting all kinds of stuff. And so, you can do unconventional work in this business and get interesting results. Yeah, the Vortex investigations, that, you know, I was by myself. I didn't have the luxury of a team. But, you know, I had these incredible experiences trying new things in new ways. I've never heard of anybody doing a paranormal investigation, you know, full on like what I did, going in, taking all the gear in and hiking it in and then working with it and doing what you could to see what you get, you know, and EVP right on site to see, you know, what is out there, what are we going to pick up, because I have no clue what I'm going to get, you know, and so, you know, that's the kind of thinking you need to put into paranormal investigation, is to be as original as you can. I mean, I'll give Destination Truth this, is they had the market appeal, and they've got the distribution channels, and they were doing some really neat stuff. They picked probably the premier site to do underwater work that you could, you know, with these Japanese ships, you know, out in this, it was like an area where the United States had bombed
all the planes that were down there, just one after the other.
Yeah, they knocked out like 300 Japanese ships in one attack. I mean, they wiped out like pretty much the whole Japanese Navy, got nuked. And they took out like 3,000 enemy soldiers, and they also got a bunch of the islanders, too. It was pretty indiscriminate. So there was a whole lot of death that happened in there, a lot of emotion.
The whole island, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and but what's weird is this Japanese ship, the ones that they focused on, they knew the exact GPS coordinates, and what happened was they go in, and they were diving in with some trucks on one of these ships. There was a transport. And they get in there, and they suddenly hear a truck engine running. They've got it on tape.
Yeah.
You could hear this. I mean, it sounded just like a truck. Yeah, and then they had they also had this high-pitched squealing. Yeah, there was that squealing that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Something screaming, squealing. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jeff, Renee says Waverly Hills is in Kentucky. Gee, I'll have to think about that. But yeah, I mean,
right.
It was insane. I mean, to see that, you know, the amount of work that they could get done with that equipment. A hydrophone isn't that difficult. It's just a microphone that's waterproofed, and you can lower it down, and then you just tie it into your existing computer gear. You know, so you can go out on a boat and do that kind of thing. I looked at it and I thought, I think I could pull that off for next year. We could find a site that's accessible to us, and we could actually, as a team, do that. You know, attack
you
a. You know, basically, you, me, we could find a site that we could all hook up on, and then we do a freshwater investigation. That was kind of crossing my mind when I was watching this.
Do you dive, though? I was thinking of taking a diving class, actually.
I've thought about, I've done scuba diving. I'm not certified, but I have, you know, under supervision, I did, I've done a couple of times with tanks and gone down, you know, about 40 feet. And it was interesting. At first, you know, you're freaked out. You're like, I'm underwater. I'm still breathing. What the hell is this? You know, but really, I mean, you need to know your dive tables. You need to know safety and all that. And but really, I mean, you know, if you really want to, you know, if you're not able to dive, there's no reason you can't still hang a line over the water. Go find a wreck, free dive it.
But you can't really go down and ask questions, though.
Yeah, you could put. You could put a hydrophone down.
You put a microphone down there?
You could put a speaker down and ask questions and have the hydrophone down there, yeah.
Without even going in the water.
Yeah,
that's
because sound transmits very well underwater. It's faster. Sound's faster underwater than up on the surface, believe it or not. So you can actually put a speaker down there and ask questions and then have it, you know, and then just have the hydrophone to pick up any response, and you don't have to get wet, a drop of water on you. You could do that. But
now,
I would like to free dive, you know.
I was thinking, though, do you think that might not get as good results because you're not actually getting, like, the personal contact kind of thing?
Well, I think if you did a free, for our purposes, I think to do a site where we would be able to get within maybe, let's say, 20 feet of the surface, we'd find I'd like to find us a wreck.
It'd be nice to try.
Yeah, it would be great to do a summer mission where we all agree that we're going to go out to a safe site where it's, you know, we can go down, take some gear down, and do some underwater video. You know, I'm willing to put some money into some housings and things like that and go down and see what we pick up. it would definitely be pushing it. Yeah, I mean, they've already broken the ground 2 years ago for this, but freshwater work is accessible to me. I'm not terribly interested in saltwater work. For one, I just don't feel like being on something on the menu for some very large shark.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure. But you know, but I do know that, you know, especially out here in the West, I mean, we've got a ton of different lakes, and there's all kinds of accidents.
Yeah.
Everything from aircraft that have gone down in water to, you know, you name it. So I would like to definitely put us on a whole new realm with this and try some work with freshwater diving and do that and then see what we get. But the first steps would be, you know, it's easy. You know, just get a boat, somebody to take you out in the boat, and you got a hydrophone. You know, that's your first investment. See what you get. You know, ask some questions.
Yeah, you never know, huh?
Yeah, it's been done for, you know, many years. People have done underwater, you know, you can have a speaker down there and you're talking to divers and they can hear you way far away. So
yeah.
Why not? You know, but I honestly, though, I'd like to do hands-on where we get get ourselves out there and, you know, face-to-face with this stuff and see what we get. But, you know, I mean, I know, like, right now on the Sacramento River, there's a paddle steamer that's wrecked on the side of the river right now. That, you know, if that in our modern day can happen, there's all sorts of little wrecks out there. And now it's a dangerous river because there's a lot of flow there, you know, and it's not the kind of thing you'd free dive a lot. But you know, the bottom line is, though, there's lots of lakes, though. Lake Tahoe is another one that's got some really interesting phenomena out there. That might be an interesting one. Or down your way, down in Arizona, there's definitely...
Oh, heck, this Lake Pleasant that's right by us, a lot of deaths have happened at this lake, and bodies that haven't been found.
Yeah,
so
you could go down and you could find a... bottom line is just look at the history and then start plotting where the most stuff has happened and then just pick that spot and go out to it and then just see what we get. So, yeah, you and I will talk some more about that, you know, in the future.
Oh. Did you see what Gerber Daisy said? That's interesting.
What's
wonder
that?
What would come on the ovulus to a dolphin sounds.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, I wonder if a dolphin could talk to us through an ovulus. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, that would be interesting to see what we would get out of it.
They're
an
so
animal.
Intelligent.
You know, that's a damn good thought. I mean, we've only got a couple of minutes remaining, but you know what? I'm going to talk to you after the show about this.
That's a really good idea, Gerber Daisy.
You know, we have a park about 120 miles from me right now that I could be out there in 2 hours, and that's pretty, actually a little less than that. It's about, you know, about 100 miles, where I could probably wangle my way in to see what would happen if we could do some recording work. That would be fun. Yeah.
Hey, John, maybe if I, you know, come out there to do the hospital thing, do you think we could do that too?
I think that we could work that in. I'll see, you know, I'd have to talk to, we'll probably get laughed out of there, but, you know, we don't know until we try.
Oh, heck, I don't care.
Yeah, but, let me see what we can pull out of our hat for that one. But, hey, you know, actually, I'm not going to be able to extend, Don. I'm sorry. My back is so out. I can't sit anymore. But I'll tell you guys what. But we got 1 minute remaining. I will do a show probably on Wednesday night. I might do an extra one just to make up for me being off. And on Tuesday night, we're going to be out in the town of Lincoln, California, on an investigation of a particular location that I can't quite talk about yet, and I'll be having Spencer Hughes working with me. So we'll talk about that, and then, of course, I'll be on Soulstream and on Kathy's show on Thursday. So look forward to seeing you guys. And, Karen, thanks for being on with me tonight. I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks for having me on. You good night, everybody. You guys take care.
Okay, you guys. Well, hey, thanks a lot to everybody. We got Blue Edge Radio. Renee, good to see you. Love you, dear. Dominica, love you, too.
Hi.
Say hi to Jack for me. We got Eagle 21, Evelyn Hart, Gerber Daisy TM, a guest 7631, Karen's Dream. Thank you for being co-host, Karen. And Mother's Jerry and Kathy, of course, doing
love
all her
you,
work.
Kathy. So,
let's see. We got about 48 seconds left. Let me think of what else we could talk about. I will tell you a little bit
seconds.
Before we leave. The Lincoln investigation is of a restaurant, and we're going to be I'll meet up with my good friend Spencer Hughes. Hopefully my back will be up for this because it's a multi-story facility, and there's a lot of very strange feelings there. I have actually been outside of it, and I may be able to broadcast from there. If that's possible to do, I'll bring the laptop, and we'll broadcast from there, and we'll do some maybe something live for about an hour and kind of include you guys in on that. So I don't know how far we'll get, but there we go. So I've got 5 seconds left. See you guys later. And Karen, go ahead.
Good night, all. Good night, John. See you guys later.